You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
It's that time again, MLB.com Extras, the American League West edition. I'm Dave Raymond, and it was rather a busy week as the Astros and Rangers try to sort things out. Where does all the anger come from between these two teams? Mariners, not exactly buyers for sure, but are they sellers at the All-Star break? The Angels' turnaround has been so dramatic, perhaps the best they've seen in decades there. And Oakland also trying to sort things out at the trade deadline. We'll cover some of those issues and more here at MLB.com Extras, the American League West edition. Boy, Alden, this team, and it's been a little while since you and I have been able to sit down and chat, but, I think this stretch of, 18 games in which the Angels have won 15, I think you and I have probably not even done a podcast together in that stretch, and maybe that's been the difference. I don't know, maybe you've got another explanation, but, sometimes when something's not working, we say, oh, the defense let them down, or the pitching hasn't quite been there, or the hitting. Right now, it looks from a distance anyway as if every single thing is working almost to perfection with them.
Yeah, Dave, it's crazy. I think the last podcast we had, we continued to talk about how the offense just hasn't clicked and how this team is just perpetually mediocre and continues to hover around 500 and who knows when they're going to take off. And I think that last podcast seems like 5 years ago now. I mean, you're right. This team in about 3 to 4 weeks has gone from a 500 team, the very definition of a 500 team, to one of the most dominant teams in baseball. They haven't just won 15 out of 18. They've outscored their opponents 101-43 in that stretch. They didn't just sweep the Red Sox. They completely dominated the Red Sox. And, the pitching, as we talked about, has been there all year for them. The defense has been pretty solid. Their bullpen has been good. Their rotation has been a strength. But their offense is finally starting to come around. And, we talked about it, about how Mike Trout and Albert Pujols have been carrying that off for a while now. But now you're starting to see other guys really start to get going. Cole Calhoun, who is pretty much the catalyst for this offense, is swinging a really hot bat right now. I mean, he entered the doubleheader batting .324 over his last 16 games. And it seemed like he was on base all day on Monday. And he's the guy who really drives this ship, because every single lineup decision Mike Socha has ever made with regards to where Mike Trout and Albert Pujols bat has been about maximizing their opportunities with runners in scoring position. And the key to that is always Cole Calhoun, because he's always the guy hitting in front of Mike Trout. He's getting on base. He's scoring runs. Eric Ibar has gotten so much more comfortable in that fifth or sixth spot. He's just not comfortable batting leadoff. He's more comfortable in a spot where he's free to swing the bat, hit with guys on base. He's swinging a hot bat now. CJ Cron, the guy that they were waiting on this spring, the guy who was supposed to get every day at bat at DH before he was sent down twice because he just couldn't figure it out, he's starting to swing a hot bat for them as well. David Freese hit a ball 451 feet to dead center field on Monday. It just seems like, I don't know what it was, something clicked. I mean, it's weird because their offensive surge dates back to pretty much when Jerry Dipoto resigned as the general manager. They went on the road, and then they scored 65 runs over a 9-game road trip. Obviously, that's not directly because a GM resigned. That has no impact at all. But, I heard an interesting theory from somebody about, those tense meetings that they had right before Jerry resigned, which we talked about. Mm-hmm. It was kind of, there's a couple people have theorized that things like that, when an offense is challenged like that, it kind of tends to light a fire in guys. The season is very long. It seems to drag on. It seems monotonous. Sometimes you need a little spark like that to get you going. And I don't know if that's why they've taken off, but it's been remarkable to watch them play. They look a lot like last year's team, the team that used to roll over everybody and could score 5-6 runs in an inning without even blinking. That's what they resemble over these last 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, and you mentioned all the various individuals. Calhoun has been great. CJ Cron, though, I mean, in the month of July, And I think his story is just interesting because of the struggles he had early. And the fact, as you mentioned, you know, he was sent down a couple of times to flat out figure it out. And, you know, and now we're talking about a guy who, though he's cooled down the last couple of days, but you take the last month or so, we're talking about a 400 hitter basically with some real pop in there as well. I mean, he has ostensibly, he's figured it out.
Yeah, he has, and he's going to be a big key. He's starting, and you could tell that Mike Socha has confidence in him because when he was slumping, he was trying to get him in situations where he could succeed. So he was really only starting against left-handed pitching, and you know, that kind of ended up being counterproductive because, you know, he never really got in a rhythm at the plate. But now we're seeing CJ Cron pretty much get every day at bats. And, you know, it's kind of, and, you know, as a front office group, you never want to put too much stock in such a small sample size. And 3 to 4 weeks over the course of a 6-month season is still a relatively small sample size. But the sense that I'm getting from them is they don't feel as desperate to add a bat before the trade deadline. And, you know, Dave, we've spoken so much on this podcast about how much they need a bat. And, you know, despite how many runs they've scored and how productive they've been offensively lately, they do still need a bat. And they will still go out and try to get a bat. I was told recently they're still casting a wide net for offense. They're still looking for that left-handed hitter who could potentially play left field. But they'll settle for any bat that they can get. I think the big key for the Angels is that whoever they get, they would prefer that player to be controllable beyond this season. Because you look ahead to next offseason, they're potentially going to have to fill catcher, third base, second base, left field, designated hitter. They're not going to go out on the free agent market to fill all five of those needs. It would be nice for them if the player that they got back, and I still believe they're going to get somebody, is controllable beyond the 2015 season. Guys like Nick Markakis, Jay Bruce, Josh Reddick, Ben Revere. Those are the guys, Adam Lind, Gerardo Parra. Those are the guys that they've kind of been looking at, but who knows what happens. I mean, look at the Red Sox. They've lost 6 out of the last 7 games, and now they look like they're in sell mode. Look at the Tigers. They look like sellers now all of a sudden. You know, the market tends to open up as we get close to July 31st, and I think that's what's starting to happen now. And, you know, that's what the Angels need because it's a little over a week before that non-waiver trade deadline.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how, you know, what direction they go and how big they go. And meanwhile, one last thing, you know, we're coming off that new home run derby. It definitely had a different feel to it during the All-Star break. Albert Pujols, you know, the man of those sayings, I mean, he got in there, he competed hard, didn't work out for him. In years past, it was always concerned, geez, you know, how do guys react after the derby, right? There was always that hangover. Woo, Albert Pujols, man. no hangover. I mean, he's passed Mike Schmidt now on the all-time list, and I don't know why, but that's one that almost just kind of, that one just hits home with me for some reason. Passing Mike Schmidt, that's a biggie. And the way he's doing it now, 3 home runs and that doubleheader, it looks like the Albert Pujols of 10 years ago is back again.
It's you could almost make the case that this is maybe the most power that Albert Pujols has ever showed in his career. And I know that's saying a lot given everything that he's ever accomplished. But when you consider the fact that he's on a 51 homer pace right now, he's never hit 50 home runs. And you know what? He probably won't hit 50 home runs. But he's doing it at this age, and he's doing it while playing half of his games at a ballpark that is just not hitter friendly at all, especially at night. Early in the summer, you get that marine layer that really knocks down balls. And, you know, he talked, Mike Schmidt hit home with Albert Pujols too. I mean, he talked last night about, he remembers Mike Schmidt coming into the Cardinals spring training facility in 2002 when he was a 22-year-old kid, coming in, talking to the guys about how to prepare, about how to be a professional. And, you know, I asked him, Albert, if somebody would have asked that Albert Pujols, if somebody would have told that Albert Pujols that he would one day hit 549 home runs and move past Mike Schmidt on the all-time homer list, he would have said, "What are you smoking?" You know, there was no way that he ever would have imagined him doing the things that he's doing. And it's just been so much fun to watch, Dave. him and Mike Trout go back and forth in home runs. As I mentioned, it's a very pitcher-friendly ballpark in Anaheim, but this is also a time when offense is down considerably in this game. I mean, the current major league slugging percentage trails only last year for the lowest mark since 1992. And you look at Mike Trout and Albert Pujols, number one and two in home runs this season. Mike Trout is on pace for 49 home runs. I mean, we just don't see this right now. They've combined to hit 15 more home runs than any other duo in baseball. This is what the Angels expected when they signed Albert Pujols to that big contract, because they figured Mike Trout was going to be a superstar. And here they are in year four, and now it's finally starting to happen for them.
Yeah, it's amazing. It has been phenomenal to watch. I'll take you one step further. Tough ballpark to hit home runs, yes. But in that division, Oakland, Seattle, I mean, they're doing it in that division is really pretty remarkable, too. Well, we have run out of time, once again, as we always do. But we'll look forward to doing it again in about a week, and who knows what kind of news you might be bringing as we bump up on the trade deadline. Have a great week, man.
You may have a bat by then, Dave. We'll see.
B-Tags, how's life in the second half? Did you have a good break?
Yeah, I had a real good break, and I think the Astros certainly needed a break going into the break with a six-game losing streak, and they came out and took a series against the Rangers. It showed some fight, literally, and their offense came around. So, we'll see what's in store for the second half now.
Hey, so talk to me about this little brouhaha the other day. Is there something there between these two teams? I mean, they've long been interleague rivals for the Silver Boot back in the day. Now in the same division, you know, in the same state, it's got the makings of something that get kind of testy maybe over time. Has it moved to that stage already?
You know, I think it might have, and, you know, I don't think that's a bad thing. I mean, I think fans have been looking for a reason for the Astros and Rangers to mean something, and, you know, finally the Astros are back in contention. Now the Rangers are slumped a little bit, so it's not like the games are going to carry a whole lot of weight pennant race-wise. But, yeah, I think there's a little bit of bad blood now between these two teams. You got two managers that were in each other's faces, and even on Sunday, Dallas Keuchel went out there with a chip on his shoulder and pitched seven innings where the Rangers could hardly touch him, and he struck out Delino DeShields, his former teammate, and he yelled at DeShields to sit down. I think we got something bubbling, a little Lone Star rivalry. I think that'll be that's good for the fans and be good for everybody, as long as they don't cross the line and start throwing bones or anything. But what happened on Saturday was innocent. Boys will be boys, but Astros and Rangers, I think, is starting to get a little fiery.
Yeah, well, good. I mean, I don't know if it's appropriate or inappropriate to feel one way or the other. I feel like sometimes we can get bogged down by the PC police, but I, for one, I like a little testiness. I like a little edge when two teams get together. And I think for both teams, it's been kind of hard over the years to really establish any kind of, you know, real serious rivalry, because certain teams are already spoken for, you know, Cubs, Cardinals, Red Sox, Yankees, Giants, Dodgers. There's still good ones that sort of emerge for a while. But, you know, when we talk about natural rivalries, like the ones I just mentioned, they exist for a good reason. A lot of times a geographic one, sometimes it's just playing for, you know, consistently for championships. I think the Astros and Braves had a little something going for a little while, but This one makes sense. And this one, you know, when you think about it in the landscape of baseball, Brian, I mean, there is potential for this to become one of those real great rivalries, and there aren't that many truly great rivalries in baseball.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, this weekend in the ballpark, the Astros had three huge crowds, and there were a lot of Rangers fans here. And so even they were battling on the field in the stands, it was just, you could hear both sides sitting and hollering, and you look around and there's Rangers fans, you know, jumping up and down, and Astros fans. And, I think you're right. I mean, the Astros, you know, for a long time when they were in the NL West, it was the Dodgers, and then you mentioned the Braves, and then the Cardinals at the, you know, around 2000. And then as far as the Astros and Rangers goes, the Astros kind of dominated them early on, and then the last 6 or 7 years, the Rangers have pounded the Astros until last year when the Astros played better. So, kind of evening out a little bit, Astros on the rise a little bit. But, yeah, I think it can be a great thing.
So, I mean, it's easy to understand that the Rangers are dealing with a lot of frustration this year, and you could see how something like that could boil over a little bit. The Astros have had such a fun run, but, you know, the end of the first half didn't go particularly well, and they had to relinquish that top spot in the division. And then now, you know, two games behind in the division here as we're, you know, just underway in the second half. But was there, you know, did you feel like maybe there was some frustration bubbling up in that Astros clubhouse as well from maybe, you know, losing that stronghold in the division? Or was there something between the two teams that you felt had been simmering for a while? To what do you attribute it?
I think the Astros were gas. I mean, they had fewer days off in the first half than any other team. And I know people are all baseball players, but they, you know, it's a grind to go out there and play every day and travel. And when you do have an off day, you're traveling. So, but, you know, I think they hit the last week of the season. I mean, they had a 10-game road trip to end the first half. And, you know, they went and they lost 2 of 3 to the Red Sox. Then they won game one in Cleveland. So they're sitting there 2-2 on this road trip. And then they just fell flat on their faces and lost the next 6. So I just think they needed a break. And the break came at a good time. And they seemed to regroup offensively a little bit. They set the pitching rotation like they like it. And, you know, they won a big series against the Rangers to come out. But, yeah, now instead of being the hunted for the first half of the season like they were, now they're looking up at the Angels. And they're 2 games out, like you said, going into the Red Sox series. And they're going to have to play well because I don't think the Angels are going anywhere. They do play. The Angels do come to Houston next week. That'll be a big series. But they're going to have to get healthy. You know, they'll probably make a move in the next 10 days maybe to help them. But, we'll see what they're all about, because even when they had a 7-game lead in May, I don't think anybody thought they were going to coast the division title. And now here they are looking up at the Angels. So it's time to find out what they're made of.
Well, you mentioned, the Angels coming in to Houston next week. Between now and then, right, I think it's between now and then, we'll have Craig Biggio going into the Hall of Fame. And noticed you had an article about Biggio and his final preparations. But I don't know, can you put in perspective what this is going to mean for the franchise, for the city of Houston, and how much have you been able to chat with Craig as he gets ready for this big honor?
Yeah, I've chatted with him on and off. Throughout the last couple of months, and had a chance on a conference call a few days ago. But I think it's a monumental achievement for the Astros. I mean, this is the first guy that's going to have an Astros plaque in the Hall of Fame. They've had Hall of Fame players come through here. Randy Johnson, who's going in Sunday as well, played here for a few months. Even Nolan Ryan played 27 years. A third of that was here in Houston, 9 years. He goes in as a Ranger. I know that a lot of fans that left a sour taste in their mouth with the Astros, but there's no denying Biggio is their guy. He's Mr. Astro. He was here the whole time. They drafted him. They developed him. He still works for the team. He holds all these records. A great guy in the community. So really a guy that all the fans are hitching their hat on. And a lot of fans have told me they're making a trip to Cooperstown to go see him get inducted. And I think there's going to be a lot of number 7 jerseys in Cooperstown, because the Astros just waited for such a long time to get their guy in the Hall of Fame. And if you're going to pick one guy to do it, Biggio's the guy. Maybe Bagwell gets in there down the road. But, you know, if Bagwell doesn't get in there, it might be a long, long time before you see another Astro go in the Hall of Fame. So this will be a moment, I think, that everybody can enjoy. And I think Biggio feels like the whole city of Houston is going in there with him. And I think there's something to that.
Yeah, I agree. He's always kind of taken that angle, too, that – you know, everything was for Houston, right? Every accomplishment, every moment, you know, he was always doing it for Houston. And I don't know, I mean, you heard it so many times for so many years, you almost wonder, if it was just a line he came up with. But, you know, sometimes I really think there's something to it. He's a pretty good dude, that guy.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, when he got elected in January and he had the press conference, the first thing he said is, "We finally got a guy in." It wasn't like, "Oh, I made it," or, you know, "It's about time." He's like, "We finally got a guy in." And he was talking about Houston and Houston fans. And it's very important to him. I mean, you're right. He's a good guy. And he really, I think especially his career went on and, you know, his last few years when he was approaching 3,000 hits and so forth, really a love affair with Biggio and the Astros fans really took off to new levels. And almost like a legend-like status now. And I think it's genuine when he says the fact that so many fans are going to be there sharing this with him, that means a lot.
Yeah. Well, it'll be pretty special. Meanwhile, do you have to sleep with the ringer on these days? Do you sleep at all these days? This is one of those summers where it looks like the news, you know, could come at any minute, and it's going to be exciting, I think. And there's got to be some anticipation that this team maybe makes a move in this next week or so as we hit the trade deadline.
Yeah, it is a time where it's a constant news cycle. You're waiting for something or a tip or someone reporting something. It's going to be that way for the next 11 days, but it's kind of refreshing because, as you know, for 3 or 4 years there at the trade deadline, it was a fire sale. They were trading away every valuable asset they had, from Berkman to Oswalt to Pence to Michael Bourne, to even down to the Brett Myers and Jay Happ. Just anybody that had been in the major leagues for a while, had value, and was making any money was dealt, and getting prospects in return and so forth. And now here we are on the other side of it. They're in a position now to make a move to get one of these guys, one of these veteran guys. And really going to be interesting to see not only who they get. I think they will get somebody, a starting pitcher, but what they have to give up. Because to get somebody good, they're going to have to give up somebody good. I know Astros fans want to trade a bucket of balls for Cole Hamels or Johnny Cueto, but they're going to have to give up a prospect or two that you're going to go, ooh, I don't like seeing him go. But they're close enough. They're only 2 games out. They got to make a run at this thing.
Well, it's going to be pretty awesome. I know for people in your position, it makes for a little extra work, some later nights perhaps, but enjoy it. It's going to be really quite a week or two here for this franchise, and we'll look forward to catching up and getting some more insight from you here in these coming days.
All right, Dave. Thanks a lot.
And, Jane, it's been a little while since we've chatted, and with only All-Star break in the middle of all that, did you get a break during the All-Star game time, or were you working? What was going on with you?
I did get a break. I was not at the All-Star game for the first time in a while, but I was actually nearby visiting some family near Cleveland, so not too far from the game, but I got to watch it as a fan for the first time in a while, which was nice.
It is kind of fun, isn't it? I mean, everybody, we all love to be a part of the big event, but sometimes it doesn't hurt just to get a couple of days off either.
It doesn't, and you know what, when you kind of sit back and watch it from a different perspective, you know, I think you kind of appreciate it in a new way again, so that was kind of cool. I mean, I love covering it, I love all the big events, but you do get a different perspective when you're just, you know, sitting on your couch watching it.
Yeah, what'd you think of the home run derby?
I loved the new format. I think it seems like a lot of people did, but I think, you know, after a few years of kind of tweaking it and trying to figure it out, I think they did a really good job. And I feel like before, you know, next year's come, it's going to be perfect. I mean, I think for everyone involved, I mean, fans, players, I mean, anyone watching, participating, it really was a fun event. I mean, that's something that people are going to want to tune into.
Yeah, it was a game changer. The buzzer beater home run, the new concept that, gosh, who could have imagined, but really, really cool stuff. Meanwhile, the Oakland A's, you know, they've played so much better in the last, oh, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 weeks, so much better than they started the year, and yet still, it's a bit of a long shot to consider what they've got to overcome in the division. And so here we go up toward the trade deadline, and this team, you know, buyer, seller, sometimes it's not clear even as they're making moves whether they're buying or selling. They, you know, they're very clever. They're very industrious. What do you anticipate's going to happen in these next couple weeks?
I do see something happening. I don't see them, you know, just letting the trade deadline go by and not doing anything, just because I feel like by the time July 31st comes, there's going to be an offer out there for them that, you know, they can't turn away. They have too many, you know, good players that are going to be free agents at the end of the year that, you know, other teams are coveting. And there is the debate of, you know, whether, you know, a trade is going to be greater than that of getting, you know, a compensation draft pick. And you kind of have to balance those two things and decide which one's better for the club. But, I mean, I do see, you know, I mean, the way Scott Kazner's been pitching, I mean, I know a lot of talk is about Sonny Gray with the A's, and for good reason. I mean, he is the ace of their staff, one of the best pitchers in the league. But you look at Scott Kazner's numbers, and, you know, he's been equally good. I mean, he really has, and I don't know that he's been talked about as much as, you know, he deserves the recognition. And so when there's a pitcher of that caliber, you know, to be had, I mean, A's aren't, you know, he's available. You know, so is Ben Zobrist, so is Tyler Clipper. But, and you look at any of those guys, all three are extremely valuable. You know, three of the most valuable guys on the A's. And, you know, they're the type of guys that, you know, teams that are contending, you know, they're one piece away from putting that, you know, that perfect puzzle together. And those are the type of guys that you want. You know, you've got your right-handed reliever who's closing for the A's. You've got one of the most versatile players in the game in Zobrist, and then one of the best pitchers in the game in Kazmir. So I have to think that within this next week, we see at least one of those guys dealt. You know, I think the A's, they've been hanging in there. They've been playing a lot better, but they just haven't been gaining much ground in the division, and they're going to have to string off, you know, wins, like 10 wins in a row for, you know, the team to even consider, you know, holding off on any of those moves. But at this point, it seems like it might be too late in the game, and I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, a trade happens in the coming days.
It is funny, you know, the timing of these kinds of things, because you look at the, you know, the Angels, who are right now in the middle of their run, right? And every team gets that run. It happens. Every team will get that chance to really turn it up. And theirs came soon enough that they are now, you know, first place in the division and feeling like world beaters. And they're going to go out there and they're going to make some noise. They're going to pick up that coveted piece. If your run, it wasn't scheduled until after July 31st, as the baseball gods would deem it, you know, you may end up tinkering with what could otherwise be a decent club. And it just, you know, to your point, talking about some of the valuable pieces that they have to deal with here, I feel like there's a lot here. I it's like, it's just kind of hard to walk away from. But I guess the question that begs asking is, okay, there's value. They have chips that they can move. But what do they want? You know, what do you see the needs or the real interest being right now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you were saying, it really is a difficult position. I don't know, you know, I've been thinking about it, and I don't know that Billy Beane's ever been in this type of position. You know, usually by now he knows whether to, you know, whether his moves are going to be by addition or subtraction. And right now, you know, you look at this team, the way they've been playing, the guys that they have, you know, you do wonder, you know, why is the record the way it is? And you go back to all the one-run losses, all the costly bullpen and defensive mistakes, and you're thinking this could be a good team. You know, they could get on that type of run that we've seen other teams make within the division. You look at the starting staff, I mean, it's the best in the American League, and you do hate to tinker with it, but then you look at your standing, and you do have to be a little bit realistic. And, I mean, this is a team that's made crazy runs in the past. I mean, you look back at 2012, you know, they were just as far back and ended up winning the division. But, you know, when you do get, I mean, it's not like they're looking for any one thing, I don't think. I just think they're looking for, you know, a pretty strong package, probably players that are, you know, if not big league ready, then very close to being big league ready, because this isn't a team that, if they do make moves, they're not going to sit back and, you know, kind of build up another team, you know, to contend in a few years. You know, they're not going to do it this year. They're going to do it next year. So they're going to be either big league players or a combo of those, and, you know, close to big league ready. And, you know, really any, you know, I don't know if there's one position. I think, you know, it's kind of like the draft. You take the best player available at the time, and, you know, I think you take the best package that's given to you. And so I think, you know, I'm sure, you know, they've been entertaining several offers, and, you know, they do have the luxury of kind of sitting back and waiting a little bit. The trade deadline isn't for another week or so. And, you know, in the meantime, they can see what the, you know, the club that they do have right now can do, how much, you know, they can gain. So I think they're going to, you know, wait it out maybe as long as they can. But if they get a deal that they just can't turn down, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they went for it.
You know, Billy Beane has proven to be that guy you cannot predict. I mean, he is as unpredictable as any. And I wonder if it's possible. You don't see this very often, but I wonder if it's possible that you could say to yourself, if you're Billy Beane, you know, I don't know that I'm ready to blow anything up or to get rid of any of these pieces. And I think we are pretty good. And maybe it's not about making a run this year, but not disturbing what you think could be a very good team next year. And that maybe is not in need of a whole lot anyway. Is it possible you could just sit through and suffer through mediocrity without signaling to fans, hey, we're doing something radical to make changes? I guess I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. Do you think that is beyond what Billy Beane might consider?
You know, I mean, I think any guys that he's considering trading right now aren't going to be around next year anyway. You know, I don't see, you know, they just don't have the means, the resources to hang on to guys that, like Kazmir and Zobrist and Clifford, who are going to be up for new deals at the end of the season. So I don't think outside of those guys they would really entertain, you know, trading someone of significance, you know, someone like Sonny Gray or Steven Vogt. I see those guys staying put because you do look to next year and, you know, you have a lot of good pieces in place, particularly in the rotation, and vote, obviously. But, you know, I think you do have to, you know, keep next year. They're always keeping next year in mind. You know, you're always trying to play in the present, but, you know, keep the future in mind and what you're going to have in the coming months and coming years. But I think they're realistic in knowing that the guys that they would trade right now, the ones that will be free agents, just they won't be around next year. So they really haven't been in their plans anyway for next year. So it's not like they're really messing with, you know, the 2016 club. I think they do have, you know, a lot of good pieces in place. The offense has been, you know, a lot better than I think people anticipated. And, you know, I think it just kind of, tweaking that, maybe bolstering that, just to make it a little more consistent. And then, you know, the same can be said for the bullpen. But I think, you know, you have as good of a rotation as the A's have, knowing that most of those guys are going to be around for several years. You know, that's a good place to start. I think if any team starts with, you know, the rotation, you know, you look around at teams that are struggling and usually it goes back to the pitching. So they have that. I don't see them really tinkering with that outside of Kazmir. And even without Kazmir, you know, they do have a lot of young guys that have been really great for them.
Well, we know this much. Whatever it is that does happen, it's going to be surprising. There's going to be something in there that's just surprising because that's just the way it seems to happen with Billy Beane. So we'll look forward to talking about it in these next couple of weeks and getting the insight and your reaction to it as well, Jane. But as always, thanks for the time. Look forward to doing it again soon.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
TR, welcome back to the second half of the season. Did you get a break during the break, or were you working? What did you do with your couple of days?
We stayed home and chilled out and watched baseball and did what Helen told me to do.
Well played. Do you watch the Home Run Derby, by the way?
Oh, yeah, we watched it. It was fantastic. It was a great Home Run Derby. Obviously, the Rangers were hoping Prince Fielder would, you know, win another title, but what, you know, Todd Frazier did was spectacular.
Yeah, what he did was spectacular, and I, you know, I've never been a big derby guy. I don't know if you were, but I'm kind of sold on the new format. I mean, it's certainly better, and I will say, like, that concept of a buzzer-beating home run, while completely foreign to me prior to last week, it's intriguing. That was really unusual and more exciting than I guess I imagined a home run derby could be.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, the new format for the first year, I don't know if we're going to have, you know, buzzer beater every year, but the new format was outstanding. I think it just has a lot of excitement and suspense. Before, they were up there just swinging away. Now, you know, there's a lot of elements to it. I think it's much better. I think this will really revive the home run derby.
Hey, speaking of swinging away, TR, the team starts the second half in Houston, and I think fans in both cities have been, you know, maybe looking, hoping, reaching, if you will, for this rivalry to really come together. For years, they played interleague and tried to make it feel like it was something. when the bench is clear a little bit and guys get in each other's faces, I think it starts to take on a little more of that rivalry feel. What did you make of the situation this last weekend in Houston?
Well, I think it was, just your typical baseball, bench clearing argument, nothing major. But I think, everybody's talked about the Rangers and the Astros rivalry at some point really starting to heat up. And I think for a lot of years, part of the problem was when the Astros were really good, in the first half of the last decade, with the Bagwell-Biggio era coming to close, the Rangers were still rebuilding. And then, when the Rangers had their glory years, the Astros were in a rebuilding mode. So I think, we're starting to see it. Both teams are good. Both teams are in the race. The Rangers are on the periphery. Obviously, Houston's right in the middle of it. I think it could heat up a little bit, not just because they're from Texas. They are in the division. It's a division that people are trying to win. And both teams, they go out there, they play hard, they want to win, and that naturally gets emotions high. And you're always going to have big crowds for these games. A lot of Ranger fans down in Houston last week to see the team play. And I know the Astros fans will start coming up to Texas as their team continues their resurgence.
Do you think there's anything with, proximity and these things? You think to the Giants and Dodgers and all those years in New York right there in each other's backyard. And then you've got the Yankees, Red Sox, you've got Cubs, Cardinals. When you think of the true, really good rivalries in Major League Baseball, a lot of them, it seems that there's a regional or real local flair to them. And, I think both these teams have lacked that. It's been difficult during their existence in separate leagues to really find that partner, that team that there's a real natural rivalry with. And now that they're in the same league, same division, in fact, and in the same state, do you think that proximity might help vault this thing, not only just to a little rivalry between one another, but maybe really one of the good baseball rivalries?
Yeah, if you talk about the rivalries that you mentioned earlier, one thing they have besides proximity is they have a long, long history. And obviously the Rangers and the Astros don't have that. Astros have only been in this division, a couple of years so far, and this is the first year the Astros have been good. One of the things that's going to, spice it up a little bit is what we talked about before, Dave, is that, Ranger fans are going to go to Houston. I was down there in Houston and, walking around the streets and at the ballpark, and you saw people wearing Rangers gear, and, you heard it at Minute Maid Park, people cheering on the Rangers, so... Again, I think the Astros fans will start coming up to Arlington, too, and that'll help. The Rangers have had good rivalries with Oakland and in Seattle and Anaheim over the years because, if good and the other team is good, that heats it up. But, you don't see very many Ranger fans traveling to those cities or vice versa. But I think with Houston and Texas, the Rangers, you'll get that.
Yeah. It looks like it might be on the front end anyway, of something pretty interesting with these two teams. Meanwhile, the ball club, continues to drift a little bit in this division. Third place in the division, but now a full 9 games out as the Angels have kind of taken control. That's one part of it, right? The Angels have done a nice job. But, boy, the Rangers now dropping, 18 of the last, 24 games. What's going on? Even Monday night in Colorado, they come back from 7 runs down, but then lose it. It's hard, to get my brain around what exactly is that missing element. Why is it this team just can't quite put it together?
Obviously it goes back to starting pitching. When they really had their surge, in May and early June, it was because of their starting pitching and, guys are giving 6 to 7 really good innings every night. And, the starting pitching has kind of taken some hits lately. They've moved some guys in and out. They got Matt Harrison back, trying to get him, back into routine. Same way with Martin Perez. A lot of moving parts into this rotation. It comes back to starting pitching. I think the bullpen is fine. The offense is, it's going to score runs for the most part. But they really have got to get the starting pitching on a roll. That's the bottom line. Gardo, Lewis, Nick Martinez. We'll see what Matt Harrison does. That's the big thing right now, is starting pitching.
Do you anticipate the next couple of weeks being active ones for the Rangers in terms of the trade market?
Well, I think they will. If they continue to fall out, we might see some moves. I know they'd like to move Wandy Rodriguez. They might talk about Gallardo, might talk about Colby Lewis. They'd have to be overwhelmed with an offer. I don't know if those guys are the top pitchers on the market right now. They might try to find, a good young starter in return that can help them, this year and the next few years. Right-handed bats, they've talked about that. They've talked about some bullpen help. I think they'll try to tinker with it, but they're right on the edge between a buyer and a seller.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think has to happen between now and then to tip it? Obviously, a couple more losses, and I think we know what direction they're going. But if they have a good series in Anaheim, it doesn't leave a whole lot of time to make big decisions. But if they win maybe the first couple of games in Anaheim, you suppose that makes them buyers?
It could. They need to win a couple here in Colorado, play well in Anaheim, and a little surge here right before the trade deadline might change some thinking a little bit. I don't know if they're going to, people talk about Cole Hamels. They're not going to get Cole Hamels. They're not going to get Justin Upton. They're not going to get these big names out there. I mean, their strength is in their farm system. They don't want to disturb that. They're close to being, to the point where their farm systems can be really, really productive. I think, they might tinker a little bit. I don't see a major purchase.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see. And they don't have a whole lot of time to make a decision on this thing, but those wheels are in motion. Well, TR, I know you're going to be busy these next couple weeks anyway, trying to keep track of all this stuff, and we look forward to checking in with you again here real soon.
All right, Dave. See you guys later.
And Greg, All-Star break now in the rearview mirror. Did you get a good break? Did you have time to relax, or were you working?
Well, I had a couple of days, but it doesn't seem like much when you're in the middle of it. You feel like, oh, there's this big break, and then all of a sudden, bam, that was it. And you're back at it, and here we hit out of it. It started the break out at New York, so of course cross country travel, and took one of the days away, and got to New York, and Mariners didn't play too well in New York, so they haven't exactly streaked out of the break yet. We're hoping to get a little push out of the break, and still kind of waiting for that to happen. A couple bullpen blips haven't been kind to them here, so kind of still waiting for them to get the traction going.
Yeah, the long wait continues, I guess, in that regard. I feel like that's sort of been the underlying theme all year. When does it get going? But Robinson Cano, at least it feels like has kind of pulled out of it a little bit. Seems like he's sort of found his stroke. Are we reading too much into it to say that, somehow that Edgar is the new hitting coach could have had this kind of an effect?
Probably. Yeah. I think that would be generous on that. I mean, yeah, sure. You can say that, but then, other guys have not done as well. I mean, you never know with a guy, sometimes just one little thing kicks in. Cano's been around a long time, and he's a guy that knows his swing as well as anybody. We've said that all along. And McLennan has continually said, hey, this guy's going to be fine in the long run. We've seen it here. Last 23 games, he's got 7 home runs. And in the first 67 games, he had 2 home runs. So definitely seeing some of that power stroke back that you kind of expect. Batting average starting to creep up. So is it Edgar? Well, you never know. Guy gives the right word. And one of the things when Edgar signed on, that I remember Willie Blunk was telling me that when he used to play with alongside Edgar, sometimes Edgar would just say one little thing to him, and he'd go, huh, that makes sense. I'm gonna try that, and click, it would work. And that's kind of what you look for from a hitting coach, is just that little thing, a little idea, and something to work on. And who knows with Cano? I mean, He's certainly looked a little more comfortable and got things going, and that is a big thing for this team. They definitely have been saying all along, we've got to get Cano going, got to get Cano going, and they got him going. Now they got to get Cruz kind of back. He's kind of fallen off. So it's kind of been the story of the season, trying to get everybody on the same page at the same time.
Yeah, and that's, that's often the case with teams that struggle a little bit, and it has been a struggle for the Mariners. You mentioned McLendon. He started the year, he's very forthright about it. Felt like this team was you know, had the chance to be great. He generally stays pretty upbeat, pretty positive. Has he wavered? Is he still singing the same tune? Or what's his read on where this team's going at this point?
Well, he can't help but be frustrated. I mean, you can't have that high of expectations and sit 8 or 9 games under 500 and looking at the tough road. You know, he's disappointed in some things. He's disappointed in the bullpen is one of the big things. You know, he thought that was really the backbone of this team last year, and he just hasn't had that same production. And boy, that's really reared its head here. The 3 of the last 4 games, they've lost on a late inning home run, and different guys each time. You know, A-Rod took Bimal deep. Teixeira took Rodney deep, and then Kinsler took Lowe deep yesterday here in Detroit, and they lose 3 games on a late-inning home run, and that's just something that didn't happen to them last year. They had the best bullpen in baseball last year, and a 2.59 ERA was a historically low number, and this year they're 3.86 more than a run and a quarter over that mark from last year. They're 22nd out of the 30 teams in bullpen ERA, and that's a whole different ball game. I was just looking at they've given up as many blown saves already as they had all of last year. So, you know, that's not a recipe for success for this team. You know, they're built on the pitching, and they just haven't had the hitting to kind of overcome that. So, you know, yeah, he's disappointed. And that's just the bullpen part of it. The offense, you know, I think he had, you know, still feels there's more to this team and really scratching his head as to why this team hasn't hit as well as they thought. You know, he keeps saying, look at the baseball cards. These guys are good hitters. They're going to get there and it just really hasn't all come together yet.
Well, you know, staying with the bullpen, Mark Lowe, you know, in aggregate has been really, really good. What about Furbush? What's his status? Is he close to returning?
Yeah, not as close as they had hoped. He's eligible to come off the DL on Thursday, which is the last game of this trip here in Detroit. And they had hoped to bring him on the trip and have him throw a bullpen, sim game, kind of get him ready and be ready to come off the DL on Thursday, but that didn't happen. A little setback. He's still back in Seattle. Threw some flat ground yesterday, and they're looking to get him up on the hill, a bullpen session tomorrow on Wednesday. So, and then, you know, see how it goes from there. So I don't think he's a long way off, but not quite as quick as they had hoped, and he is a big part. He's that lefty guy they got to have. You know, I was looking at his numbers the other day. I think opposing batters hitting like 118 off him, and you know, he's 16 inherited runners, and he hasn't allowed one to score. I mean, those are the kind of numbers you live for when you bring a guy in out of the pen, and then they need that right now. They need every man on deck right now, and they certainly need to get him back.
Yeah. So, I guess as we move past the All-Star break, it's inevitable now. We got to ask about you know, Jack Cerenzik. What is do you get any sense what his thoughts are and what the plan might be for this team now in these next couple of weeks?
Well, they're pretty clear that they're not going to make a big move. I think they felt like they made the big move to get Trumbo. They went early on that. I don't think they're going to give up a ton. They don't have a ton of big prospects as part of the problem, and not really at this position sitting, you know, 9-10 games back to really make a big gamble. You know, I suppose if they get on that big streak and win 10 in a row going into the trading deadline, maybe it's a different story, but this is a team that hasn't won close to that. You know, the longest streak of the year is 4, and they haven't won more than 2 in a row this entire month. They need to get on that streak. They haven't, and I don't see them being big players at the deadline. I mean, I suppose if they sit here or keep where they are, they might be sellers at some point. You know, they got a couple of veterans that it could be guys they might get a piece for back if it comes to that, but I don't see them saying, hey, we're gonna go all in, because at this point that's a tough thing to do, and you're probably wasting your prospects to get a big one piece that they're not one piece away at this point. Doesn't seem like you know, they just need really. I think they're set on we got what we thought was a good club. Let's give these guys time, and they should be better than they are. And let's see what happens.
Well, you know, it's kind of an interesting spot. You know, most teams, it seems like, make that decision to be a buyer or a seller, right? I mean, I just feel like it's almost like a binary decision. You know, it's are you in or are you out?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if you don't really have pieces or chips that you want to deal, then you're not going to make a move. And I'm with you. I mean, I don't feel like they're in that spot where they need to be going out and being aggressive here for a second half push, but it just seems kind of rare to me to see a team just sort of, you know, stand pat, kind of like, well,
yeah, we'll see.
I don't know.
Well, that could change. I mean, they have a couple of guys that are going to be free agents next year that would be the kind of guys you'd probably give up to. Tim Happ is a guy who's going to be a free agent next year. It could be attractive to a team that's looking for a lefty starter. Austin Jackson is another free agent. If he's a piece somebody who's looking for. I mean, they've got some guys. I don't know. Fernando Rodney is probably a guy that if somebody was interested, they'd probably be willing to move. They could certainly make moves, and you never know how that's going to go. There's certainly not going to be a buyer, I would say that, and if they're going to be a seller, I think it would be with a couple of selected veterans. I mean, if you look at it, Dave, the core of this team remains built for the long run, and that core maybe didn't pay off this year, but sometimes, the Royals are probably a pretty good example of a team that didn't sell off a bunch of stuff that kind of stayed consistent and then took the step forward. And you look at the core of this team, I mean, Cruz has got three more years on his deal. Cano's got a long way to go. Felix certainly is still in his prime and a long way to go. Seager, they just signed a 7-year deal. I mean, Seth Smith they brought in, he's got another year on his deal. Trumbo they just traded for, he's got another year. I mean, these guys, a lot of the young guys are haven't even got to arbitration yet. Your Taiwan Walkers and Montgomery's and Paxton's and Zunino's and Bradner. I mean, these guys, that remains the core of this team. So those aren't pieces you're going to give up. You got a lot of team control left. So, Carson Smith, the closer, has shown a lot. Maybe they deal a Mark Lowe, who's been very good, and maybe a contending team looks for that piece on a veteran. Maybe you get something back for there. But the basic core of this team, I just don't see them moving those pieces.
Yeah. And your point about Happ, I mean, he did himself right in his most recent start, and that might go a long way to getting some value there for the Mariners too. So, well, it'll be interesting to watch either way, Greg, and we know that you're going to be there watching it for us, and we look forward to catching up and getting some of that news again next week.
Sounds good, Dave. Good talking to you.
Well, thanks again. It was a great week, and we look forward to more of it again. This has been MLB.com Extras, the American League West edition.